delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
So I was in church this past weekend. Often am. I was in church this past weekend, and it occurred to me, listening to the pastor, how do Christian Democrats rationalize second and third term abortions? Seriously, how do Christian Democrats, and I was in the pew with two hardcore Christians, hardcore Democrats, how do these two things match up? I'm lost. And I've never asked about the abortion thing because I just haven't, out of respect their family, so I didn't ask. And I didn't want to go down that road with them. But how do Democrats make that work? How do they rationalize in their brains that it's okay to vote for Democrats who openly support, you know, abortion anytime, and no matter how late, on demand? David Ozerod is a PhD and director of the B. Kenneth Simon Center for Principles and Politics at the Heritage Foundation. Maybe he can help me. David, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So how do you answer that question? How do you get a Christian Democrat, and there are millions that are hardcore, you know, Christians, but that are Democrats, and the term of, I'll just use abortion. To me, there's just no way to get these two to work in conjunction with each other, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the first thing I would say, Steve, is I would commend you for not posing the question to them. One thing I dislike about living in Washington is how everything is politicized all the time, and I think it eats away at civic comedy. It makes us feel that we're no longer all citizens, but we're always divided in clans, and I think your judgment is right in that case. In terms of how to answer your question, look, I don't know. I'm Jewish. I have the same question in terms of how some of the Jews in this country vote in terms of how to square these two things. I can't look into the souls of other people and give an account of what goes on in there. What I will say is I think you approach it the right way. Is the question to raise is, how is it that we tolerate elective late-term abortions? One card I like to play in talking with these people is people on the left are usually enamored with Sweden. Sweden is the perfect country in the world. If only we could be more like Sweden. This is the constant refrain. One thing I tell them is Sweden doesn't allow elective late-term abortions. We are one of only seven countries in the world. We're up there with North Korea and China that allows elective late-term abortions. So setting aside what you think about the first trimester, can't we all agree that we should do away with that? And I found that these arguments kind of plant a seed of doubt in the minds of people, and that they may not concede the point to you immediately, but they kind of start to mull it over. It is deeply disturbing when you look at it this way, that we are really an outlier in the international community, which is usually what the left likes to compare us to.
No, you know, that's interesting that you point out that on the subject of abortion, North Korea and China, you know, these are not people we want to align ourselves with when it comes to human rights and looking out for the underdog. What bigger underdog is there except for somebody, a fetus for that matter? But there are other places you can compare and contrast, correct?
But you'll find, Canada is one of them. But I think none of the Western European democracies allow elective late-term abortions. I could be wrong, but essentially all the countries that are supposedly more progressive than us, that have a better political system, supposedly larger welfare states, and that we should be emulating in a whole host of ways, seem to have a more robust moral compass than we do on this question.
All right, so why is there this fascination with Sweden? And it's not just about abortion; it's about renewable energy. It's about a whole host of things. It's about social programs. It's about how much money people are allowed to make, and so on and so forth. First of all, Sweden's a small country. There is no fair comparison to America, but people do it anyway. You're right.
Well, that's the key thing. You just hit the nail on the head. Look, I have nothing against Sweden. I mean, it's a fine country for Swedes. But to compare America to Sweden is silly. America isn't a country. It's a continent. It just look at a map. It contains tremendous geographical, cultural, and ethnic and religious diversity, something that Sweden doesn't have to deal with. If we want to compare ourselves to anyone, if anything, we might compare ourselves to Canada, although even there, the population of Canada is a tenth of ours. I don't know, maybe we compare ourselves to Brazil or to Russia or to China, to these very, very big countries. And we can learn from other countries. We shouldn't think that we're the best at everything. I mean, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. This is another area where I think Sweden is better than this. But on the whole, I think the proper way to think of politics is to be anchored in your own country. No two countries are alike. We have a distinctive history, distinctive culture. We should learn to others, look at others, try to learn from them as possible. But this idea that you can somehow recreate one country in another, it's the height of foolishness.
Yeah, I think you're right. The height of foolishness. And it seems to me that we have this whole teacher's lounge mentality, you know, because I think that, you know, we're allowing people to espouse their beliefs and their views based on nothing more than the musings of their own mind and having never lived among the rest of us in what we call the real world. And I believe that. I believe that there are academics that have, you know, amused themselves in an academic world in almost a pretend way and never been out among the rest of us that are, you know, scratching to make a living every day. David, I'll give you the last word.
Look, we're all enamored with theory because there's something appealing about theory because a 22-year-old can sit down who doesn't know the first thing about life, understand three principles, and then claim to be an expert in any given field. I'm an expert in poverty relief. I'm an expert in marriage because I studied it and I did a master's or I teach it in a university. The truth of the matter is, of course, there's some room from theory, but theory usually comes after experience. Who came up with these theories are people who've spent a long time on the ground, understand statesmanship, understand civil society, understand marriage, and then they, with great difficulty, managed to distill what they've learned over the course of a lifetime. That's the type of theory I admire, not the one that a 22-year-old with no experience espouses.